The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Explicit content may be heard throughout this podcast. Listening discretion is advised.
When does that para geek start? It is Wednesday? It is Wednesday, 1/26/2022. Hope you guys are having an awesome week. I believe this is the last week of the month, a full week anyway. Thank you for tuning in to listen to Exploring the Paranormal Perspective with moi. Coming up, I have Leanna Renee Heber, part two. But for now, here are snippets from last week's show. If you want to hear the full show, unedited, you can go to Patreon, EPP_podcast. I'll have the full show up soon, along with the video, and others will be joining behind shortly. Now, without further ado, here are the snippets and the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? You've been busy.
I have so many books due in a short amount of time, and I just said yes to something else because I don't know how to say no. But I know we all know this feeling. Every creative person knows this feeling. Yeah. So it's been a real labor of love that's been really helpful in having an online marketplace where also you can get signed books there too. The series itself is set in a realistic 19th century New York City.
Exactly. Let's not do that.
I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in building a better world, and that only comes from being working with others who are of different backgrounds. I mean, that's my series. You know, even though it's set in the 19th century, you know, it's very diverse. It has a lot of people who are fighting for their rights in various capacities. But I really do feel like some of that stuff, I'm tapping into something else that is around me and that wants to have their story told. And I just try to have some boundaries with that I just had to kind of continue using her as a bit of a, as this bit of a sort of spectral auntie in a way, but one that's kind of like her own force of nature. I won't say no. I appreciate that. You'll have a lot of backstory in everything. So you'll see that things are sort of prequels to other things in some way. Yeah. The fact that Edwin Booth, the Players Club, he was trying so desperately to get respect for actors because not a lot of people understand how really marginalized actors were. They were disrespected. They were thought to be amoral people. They weren't even able to be buried in churchyards. I try not to, mainly because, unless there's something very, very specific, I try not to because I don't want any of my friends to wonder where I drew the line between them and these other fictions.
Oh, you are. It reminds me a lot, especially when you talk about bringing your characters from other books that you've created and everything, of kind of like Sherilyn Kenyon, because mm-hmm. she would go back. I love her.
I love her. She's a friend of mine and I adore her.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful.
I know that.
She's the nicest lady. And I love her books and her as a person. So
Oh, but her, just seeing how she goes back and gosh, sometimes ancient times, actually.
Oh, seriously. It's incredible.
Amazing.
It's incredible.
One of these days she's going to come on my show because I want to talk to her about all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, but, and that's, she, her readers feel like those characters are family at this point. Oh, and yeah. then, and they all treat them like that, which is a beautiful thing. And it's a beautiful thing to see her with her fans too, because she's just so gracious and loving and remembers people. It's just, it's a wonderful thing. It's, yeah, it's really great. So I feel like that's kind of just kind of also who she is too, just kind of taking people with her in that regard, whether it's her characters or whether it's, you know, the fans who have come to love them too. It's just really wonderful.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just, you know, I hadn't planned on all of my characters kind of interweaving, but it just sort of ended up that way. And probably because I'm a very character driven writer as an actor, I think that, you know, that character for me is foremost, first and foremost. And so I think continuing to build on that. And that's, you know, I love being able to still be with these characters, just like I love watching all the Marvel films and all the side properties, because I love all the deep dive and oh good, I love these characters, I get to spend more time with them. So yeah, I'm a big sucker for that kind of thing.
Oh, me too, totally. I'll sit there and go, oh, there's another book with that, okay, let's go look
that.
And you just pretty much have me buying all your books now because you mentioned that. I was a role player online for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
After doing that for so long, I'm sitting there going, man, I should have saved all that stuff. And then I started writing a book on one of my favorite characters that I had.
That's great.
So happened to be a bisexual tiger lichen. The first three chapters were great. I mean, I'm sitting there reading it and going, oh, this is great. And then I just kind of died. And it's like, oh, I got too much to do on this aspect. And I really like doing that more.
Well, the nice thing about writing is that you can come back to it at any point. There's no too late to be a writer. You know, that's, writing will always be there for you. And it's something that you can do even just in little tiny chunks if you ever feel like it. But it also it should be there for you to enjoy it, not as a pressure. I mean, for me, I keep telling myself the minute that this doesn't become fun anymore, the minute that I feel like this is all work and no joy. I mean, and it's a lot of work. And a lot of times it can be very frustrating, you know, and I'll hit a wall with stuff and I'll get very, very frustrated. But it's why I have more than one artistic project going at any time, because I always want to be creating. I need to. It's like, it's literally the air I breathe is I have to be working on something creative. And so I just always have more than one project, because you will hit a wall and it is frustrating. And then the business itself, the actual writing business, the business of publishing, traditional publishing is fraught with issues and ups and downs. And, you know, my first publisher went bankrupt and owed me lots of money I will never see. And, you know, it was a really bad taste in my mouth right out of the gate. But at the same time, I was like, well, am I going to let this stop me from writing other books? No. But, you know, but there's a lot and a lot of disappointment in the business too. And it's tough to just stay published and it's tough to stay writing. But, you know, I've learned to be adaptable and to try out different types of things, whether it's, you know, writing more short form stuff or writing, you know, for the audio market, like I've talked about too. It's like, so flexibility is really important, but yeah. But I think, you know, role play is so much fun. And it's a great, a lot of people, you know, it's a great way to exercise your writing muscle, and it's got great content because it's good character development. It's good, you know, cast dynamics. And also too, like a lot of friends, you know, who are writers started writing fan fiction and started out there. Yes. And then they realized they wanted to do their own original stuff. And that's, you know, I think that that's also a great way to just get into the practice of writing, because the discipline of writing really just means you need to write consistently. Doesn't necessarily have to be every day, but just consistently. Because I don't necessarily write every day, but consistently, yes. So
I think you'd burn out if you wrote every day, unless you're just one of those types of people that absolutely love to write all the time.
Right. I personally can't, because I just have too many other things I love doing. And I also do still have performance. I do have online shows that I do, and in addition to in-person shows that I do. So, you know, I still have a very active performing life. So that means that I can't always be writing every single day.
Oh no, not when you're doing that stuff. And do you still do tours and stuff too?
Yeah, periodically. The pandemic really put a, uh, put a halt onto a lot of in-person tours. And so I've very much limited what I'm doing on that. I do a lot of virtual stuff. So I've definitely done virtual tours, but once things get back rolling, but I said yes to so many publishing contracts that I had to tell my tour guide boss that I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm really not going to be able to do much this season because I'm really overbooked with writing. So that's a good problem to have.
No, it is.
But yeah, so I'll definitely still keep my tour guide license active and, you know, and pop in and do the occasional tour, but I'm certainly not going to be doing it full time just because the writing has been kind of really up at the, it's been up there with, you know, I'm working for four different publishers right now. So
four different publishers. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. Four different series that you got going or just.
Yeah. Yeah. Four different series. So I'm not sure how many are going to be in each series. Some of it might end up just being a one-off, but yeah, I'm working for four different companies. Yeah.
Accident.
I mean, some of it. Yeah. So we'll sort of see. Yeah. So it's going to be the next year is going to see a lot of new stuff coming out. So I'm excited.
Well, one of the things that I heard about you, which is going to bring us into the paranormal concept, is that you got to sit down and talk to Neil deGrasse Tyson, one of the smartest men ever in astronomy.
Truly.
I mean, oh my gosh. He's amazing. I love the stars and I love, now ask me if I ever want to go out there. No, but I
no,
love.
No. No, because everything out there is going to kill you. So yeah, no, I'm with you on that. No, I'm also not, I have no desire to go into space, but no, I do love, so for a while, for a long time, I had a job where I was a stage manager for a small television studio in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And this studio specialized in media tours. So when Dr. Tyson was coming in to promote the Cosmos series, you know, I was the stage manager. So it's, you know, the media tours are usually about 4 hours long. And as a stage manager, I'm responsible for getting their microphones set up, getting their monitor in their ear, and also changing cue cards so that they always know who they're talking to, because, you know, they're just sitting in front of a camera, but their satellite is bouncing them to different stations around the nation, sometimes the world. So I'm, you know, they're letting them know, okay, now you're talking to this person or whatever. So there's usually a little bit of downtime between when you go from, say, the Phoenix affiliate to the, you know, California affiliate or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so in between then, we were just talking about things and he asked what I do other things besides being in a small cramped studio? And I said, yeah, I'm a writer. I write books about ghosts. And he was very interested in this aspect, but of course, a complete skeptic about the paranormal. But he did say, and I have since learned that this is sort of a bit of a list that he will tell anyone who might be dealing with the paranormal to sort of go down this list of scientific exploration questions. So he said, okay, so I don't necessarily believe in ghosts, but if you see a ghost, ask it, is it clothed? Does it have clothes? If so, where did it get its clothes? Is it cold where you are? Do you have a sense of other ghosts, other entities? How long have you been here? Do you have a sense of time? Do you have a place that you, do you have any structures around you? So like all of these sort of, scientific questions about, environment. Wow. Was very interesting to me. And so it did make me think actually then about how the physics and the mechanics of my ghost world works, because and especially in my Spirit Suitor series, which is where Maggie, the ghost, has her own spinoff from Spectral City that I'm currently writing right now. I had to think about how does a spirit who manifests visibly to others who can see her, how does she rest? Because one of the things that I do know as a ghost tour guide and as somebody sort of steeped in ghost lore, ghosts aren't manifest all the time. They're not visible always. And they very much sort of come and go. So I had to kind of think about, well, maybe Maggie sort of doesn't use all her energy all the time because you can't. So she just has to sort of rest by going back to a place that she's familiar with and just dematerializing so that she's not visible, and then rematerializing when she's needed or called. And so her ability to rest and her ability to come forward has a lot to do with a living kind of calling on her, sort of summoning her quite truly, which is going back to the spiritualists and the seances of calling forward a spirit. So, you know, Dr. Tyson's list, even though he was, you know, saying this with the utmost skepticism, that he was still sort of entertaining. Well, okay, if you do see something, then I have some questions for it.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Demons, vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight, on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
You know, so that was really delightful. And it was, you know, I think that that's the kind of thing that we need to have in both science and faith, because I don't think that I personally, as a person of faith, I'm very open in terms of my faith. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that no one faith has the monopoly on it. I think that everybody has a right idea, as long as that religion is with love and acceptance at its mm-hmm. core. If it's not with love and acceptance, then I don't want anything to do with it. That's not faith to me. So for me, having this very sort of open belief in something out there, I don't ever think that's antithetical with science at all. And so my book certainly don't try to pit science against faith at any point, because I don't think there is a conflict. Now, that's my personal view. And I try not to proselytize about anything in my books. I try to keep it very open. But my books are very spiritual, though, because I'm dealing with actual spirits. And so there is discussion of the soul and what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't presume to know what happens in the great beyond. I use the phrase the great beyond, or the undiscovered country, to quote Shakespeare, about what happens in the beyond. My spirits are really kind of in a middle ground where they are tied to the mortal world because they are still trying to help the mortal world. So they're kind of in this sort of between place. And I have different, you know, names for that depending on the series about how I use the language of that, but it does have its own mechanics. So I definitely think that, you know, Dr. Tyson is onto something in, you have to have a sense of world building when you're doing this. So that was helpful for me to continue to kind of think about those questions. And I explained that Maggie decided that she was going to manifest in her favorite ball gown. And the question about clothes was very interesting. And I thought, yeah, why do we see spirits as clothed if they're just in fact not corporeal? And so for Maggie, it's that she wanted to be remembered, not how she died, but in her favorite dress instead.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I would like to think that they grew up in a time, some of them grew up in a time where clothing is something that is always worn and considered to be
right
the norm.
Right. So it's just what you do. So if you're going to manifest, exactly, this is the proper way to do it. Exactly.
I mean, what was your biggest fears growing up? Showing up naked? Doesn't sound like so rare.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Those anxiety dreams are so real.
When you're on
stage. I don't think that goes away necessarily. I do think it's interesting when, you know, when people do see spirits, there's not always a sense of, like, sometimes it's just a form. So sometimes you can't necessarily see the details of things, right. But the more potent the haunting, the more details you tend to see. So I sort of also kind of use that sort of spectrum of how potent a spirit is as to how many details the reader or my mediums see.
Now, do you in real life have friends that are clairvoyant and psychic and?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have a lot of different friends, and, you know, all of our respective sites are a little bit different. I'm very energy sensitive, so I'll know that a place is haunted, but I'll tend to know where it's haunted, but I don't see it. Not necessarily. I've seen a couple of things, so I know it's really powerful when I've seen it. So I'll definitely be susceptible to changes in temperature. So cold spots love to find me. Mm-hmm. And I'll tend to have a bit of a sense of where things are. Some of my friends will play a little game of like, okay, so how many people are standing over there? And I'll say, well, there's two living people standing over there, but their spectral friend is to their right. We play a little bit of a game. And so that, the, you know, so that the friend can know how many actual living people are there. And so that I can sort of test my, you know, my radar, as it were. You know, so, you know, but other friends of mine will visibly see things. Other friends will hear things. I've certainly had clairaudient hauntings happen to me. So I've heard things before too. So I think that it's the one I'm really glad I don't have is a clairolfactory haunting, the smell hauntings. Oh. I'm really glad I don't have that one because I'm very sensitive to scent. So I really wouldn't want that one. I would much rather just have a vague sixth sense of, okay, I don't know why I know that there's something over there, but there's something over there. Mm. And I can't describe it in my five senses because it doesn't apply in my five senses or something else. So, you know, there definitely, the older I've gotten, the less afraid I am to be honest about these things. Cause I'm sort of like, yeah, you know what, when I was younger, I might've worried about it, but seeming crazy. And I'm like, oh, that's fine. If somebody thinks I'm crazy for it, then that's on them. And I don't care anymore.
I'm crazy. I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Right. No, I was going to say, I was like, I know I'm in good company. So, and especially with this audience, I'm like, no.
Oh yeah. You're good. You're great.
Yeah. You're good. So welcome fellow friends of these things. But I do also think like with all of these things, all of us do have to be, we're constantly talking also about how do we make sure we protect ourselves because there's tons of negative energies out there and you just don't want to mess with that stuff.
No.
So, and if you're so having a filter,
positive and loving type person, I like to consider myself a very positive and fun type person.
I have found that to be the truth. I have found that to be the case. So I agree. You are. Yes.
So I don't like negativity. And anytime negativity comes, I want to turn around and just walk the other way.
Right. Exactly. And I think that applies just in life as well as in dealing with the paranormal. Oh, yeah. So, you know, there are specific haunted places in New York that I'm like, yeah, no, I know, like I have an uneasy, you know, truce with a certain building in the Greenwich Village, because I'm like, I don't like it and it doesn't like me. But I have to talk about it in the tours. So, but I just have to shield. And then I take everybody across the street at the end of the tour, just shake it off. I don't end there because it's actually the last stop on the tour. One of them, it's particularly, just a really bad vibe. So I just take people across the street and make them shake it off, whether they believe it or not. I don't care. I was like, you just do this for me.
Right. So. I don't even know how to shield or how to unshield. I've had a couple of friends of mine and a couple of mediums tell me, well, you've got a wall thick as anything up and it's blocking everything. I'm like, oh, well, I don't even know how I got there. So,
well, in some ways that's actually fine. So in some ways I wouldn't even mess with that. I think,
but I would love, because I hear them sometimes. I'm limited. I only know my paranormal side and what I research and stuff in the paranormal, but to be an actual person that talks or, aside from investigating, interacts with them. Now I try to interact with them here, but I think I try too hard because I get nothing.
That's a good point. I do think that it tends to be, you know, I tend to believe that, again, that trying too hard will be its own block sometimes. I think it's just, it's usually when you least expect it. It's out of the corner of your eye. It's out, you know, it's those things. And so I really have a pretty go with the flow kind of attitude about it, because I feel like either something's going to show up or it's not going to show up, because I already believe. So it's like, I don't personally need there to be a proof about anything. Yeah. And so I don't tend to necessarily go seeking or hunting, because I will go to haunted places because I'm curious about the history, totally. Mm-hmm. Or I want to use it in a book, or I want to talk about it, or I want to write about it. Absolutely. But I feel in some ways it's like, no, I don't necessarily need to hunt, because I totally believe. And if something wants to show up, it'll show up. Oh, but I do. And I think sometimes, you know, for people who really, really want to see something, sometimes I just say, well, relax, it'll happen just when you least expect it. And even, you know, Eve in the Spectral City books, Eve, who is dealing with ghosts all the time, she says spirits are creatures of startle and shock. Yeah. So even though she deals with them, they're her friends, they're still startling. You know, they will come through the wall when you don't expect it, or, you know, those kinds of things. So I think in those ways, it's like, yeah, we still also have to be aware that these things are still uncanny.
Oh, yeah.
And the uncanny is something that is always going to be a little, you know, but it's also why we love it, because it gives us a fun chill. But again, you know, how open anyone is with that, you know, folks have to watch that. I mean, it's why I did go ahead and put the psychic shielding lesson into the Summoning of Souls, because I want to make sure that the people who are really interested in connecting with something paranormal don't just do so without having a filter.
Oh yeah.
I do think that's important.
Or protection of some sort, whatever your religion is.
Exactly. And I'm very talismanic. My characters always have little tokens on them that mean something to them. Mm-hmm. And you know, whether it's, and I use that in my jewelry shop too. It's like the, you know, these little things that have their own magic and meaning, that the person takes on. It's like, that's your icon. Mm-hmm. That's your token. That's, you know, and it can be anything, as long as you ascribe meaning to it and some of your own personal energy to it. So
I totally believe that. With everything in my being, especially this right here. Mm-hmm. Now the cross was never on this. It was always just the mom.
Yeah.
And of course it's endearing to me.
I mean, of course.
But when I got this, I had thought about taking it off one day, and something inside me was just like, no, you don't want to take that off. You don't ever want to take that off. So I put it on the same chain as my mom, and it hasn't come off, and I've had it on there for 3 years. And I bought this from Christopher Booth, whenever he got all those crosses from that nunnery.
Oh yeah, totally.
Geez. And I was like, wow.
That's awesome.
Okay. But it's just, I totally agree. But then also I had Padre Casey Scruggs. Mm-hmm. He had some rosaries that he had made. Yes. And I saw one that was in my birthstone. So I was like, could you bless this for me, because I think I'm going to take those with me on investigations and stuff.
Oh, awesome. He's so great. Oh, what a neat guy.
Oh, he is. So awesome. I was calling him Padre before he became a Padre.
That's so great. Just what a great person. I'm so glad. Has he been on this show? Because he should be on the show.
He was on the last show I did, but I'm going to grab him and bring him back. My show too.
I would love to hear more of his stories.
You know, doing the stuff, I mean, what are you into? What is your religion?
I really consider myself a bit of a Christian witch.
Christian witch. Yep. I saw that too. Especially when you're from
it's really, at this point, it's really syncretic. It's, you know, crystal magic, natural magic, plant, flower, magic, and an open Protestant,
Protestant denomination here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was raised really, really left wing Christian. So like we would just go to whatever church was the most progressive. Oh. My parents just kind of like, you know, in rural Ohio, which was kind of hard to find a progressive church. So just like, where is the place that's the most open? And so there was like a Unitarian church at a certain point. There was, you know, so I bounced around every kind of, Protestant church, the Quakers. And I love Quaker services, but I'm a smells and bells lady. So I end up really connecting with the Episcopalians, because they were the first to have women clergy, and they were, you know, ardently against slavery. And, you know, so many of them were working hard for the abolitionist cause. They were the first to have LGBT clergy, and be open and affirming. I think at the end of the day, like my faith leanings is Episcopalian, because they're also very like, mysticism is not a foreign concept there. It's like, that's also, you know, it's like when you go to St. John the Divine in Manhattan, it's like, it's a very mystical experience. And so that sort of pagan part of me feels also welcome there too. So that's kind of that's sort of where
that's really interesting. That's
my intersection.
I've been to,
is actually mysticism, really sort of mysticism. Christian mysticism.
Mm-hmm. Backwoods Presbyterian here is where I went to church. But growing up, I was allowed to go wherever I wanted. So I've been to gospel churches. I've been to Baptist churches. I was baptized in a Methodist church. I've gone to Catholic churches. So I've experienced a lot of different ones and come to find they all connect. It's all just one, just a different concept of the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's just sitting there listening to that. And when my mom was talking to me about it, because she thinks I'm crazy and that what I'm doing is absolutely nuts. But I told her, I said, well, if you actually experienced other religions aside from just the one that you're used to, you would see that a lot of it, Wiccan, pagan, Presbyterian, Protestant, Methodist, all of those actually kind of are just one. Even Satanism, they're all combined.
Exactly.
I mean, Buddhism, everything.
It's everything. Well, when you look, there's a film that I love called Visions, and it's about one of my favorite characters in history, Hildegard von Bingen. She was a Christian mystic, and she was one of the first women leaders to actually write a book about her experiences, her visions. There's this movie that the German filmmaker made called Visions, and it's about her life. And you see her healing people with stones and crystals and herbs. And so it's all like, I mean, she's doing stuff that modern day would be said as witchcraft. Like she's literally putting, you know, crystal magic onto like some like parts of, you know, basically sort of chakra points on a body, you know? So it's like these other things where it's like, okay, well, you know, this is the 1100s and this, you know, something that would later be sort of seen as, oh, that's kind of woo. No, that was just using the natural world to heal. So, you know, those things aren't antithetical. And so like, I really loved seeing that, like some of the things I idolized her and her music because she's a musician. And so there's beautiful pieces of choral music that she made that we still get to listen to today that she was making in the 1100s as a female leader in the church there in Germany. And I just think that's just so cool. And just the idea that, oh, the things I'm drawn to are the things that she was using too. It's just like those are kind of neat things. So I feel like, you know, her art is also very mystical. So I think, you know, finding those connections, I always get just very excited about, and I certainly make those connections in my books as well of like, hey, you know, we all have different backgrounds, but at the end of the day, there's common threads through all of it.
Exactly.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
I was in the hospital with my son for 18 months.
When he got injured, I wasn't prepared, but I knew I had to be strong.
When I was told about John's injury, I was in complete shock. I just remember rushing into his room and giving him a big hug and letting him know I was there.
These veterans and families are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For thousands of severely injured veterans, everyday life is filled with barriers.
It was really the little things throughout the house.
Counters that you can't roll up to.
I had to drag my wheelchair down steps.
I want to help, but he is so determined.
At Homes for Our Troops, we build specially adapted custom homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and automatic door openers that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family.
This house is freedom.
It's hope. It's a new beginning.
This house has given me my family back.
To learn more, visit hfotusa.org.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Juarez with Cat Paranormal of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Willow Lehman-Shunt, psychic medium, Dark Nola Paranormal, New Orleans.
And I'm Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota. And together, we are The Calling. Every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on ParaXRadioNetwork.com.
For a truly unique podcast experience, we have you covered. Spirit Bayou with CJ Dunham airs live from the Third Coast in Southeast Texas on Tuesday and Fridays at midnight Eastern Time, covering Creole folklore and folk magic to strange paranormal activity to new equipment for the field. CJ Dunham is a Catholic swamp witch, a devotee to our Mother Mary in the Trinity, a true believer in our Lord, the Holy Ghost, and Christ. Peace be with your spirit and the spirits by you.
Hey, this is Lee.
And this is Michelle.
And this is Dustin from the Dead Zone.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para X.
I
do
kind of like end part of it where Maggie comes running in and he feels her, and I was like, what, man, I gotta read this whole book. Because I did skin it. I did see that part, and she actually touches his face, and I'm like, he can feel her. I need to go back and read.
It's been fun to sort of have somebody who has no sensitivity at all, but just because of being in around, because of his connection to Eve, you know, and that's that romance between the two of them is like really one of my favorite little things. It's such so a slow adorable. Burn romance. It's really cute. And it just, they're just so cute. And I didn't realize that it was going to kind of go that direction. It just, that they, I just sort of followed their lead as characters. And I thought, oh my goodness, you are adorable. And that just began to sort of steal the show for me. Yeah. Originally they were just going to be sort of be colleagues. And then I was like, oh no, no. No, there's a spark there. We have to explore this.
Well, gosh, they live in your head. So when they live in your head, they become real in a sense. Oh,
they're so real. So real to me.
Oh gosh. I know. I understand that concept because all the characters that I made for the role play are real, even though nine times out of 10, they weren't related to each other. They were still real. And it's like, aches my heart sometimes because I'll sit there and be like, I really want to write about him, but it was so sad to write about that first chapter. And I really don't want to go into that long concept of bringing him out. But
that's the thing too, is like the emotional energy that writing takes sometimes. But that's really the greatest compliment that I can ever get as a writer.
You did make me cry too, by the way. And I was only skimming when I got to that part. And I won't put this on the show because it's too much of a spoiler.
Well, thank you for that. Like, I just was trying to just be, you know, so many times you've got, you know, a police procedural. I mean, this is basically a paranormal police procedural in a lot of ways. And they're focusing on some sort of like upper class or, kind of famed or high profile kind of situation. And in this case, I just wanted this to be about a family that no one would have spent much time on because they were, poverty stricken immigrants. And so it's like, I'm like, nope, they're exactly who the ghost precinct wants to help. And they're exactly. And so the mystery of that surrounds that family does end up playing into other parts. The interesting thing about the three novels in the series is that it is still a historical fantasy in that not everything is solved in the first book. So mystery fans get a little frustrated with me because not everything is solved at the end of the first book because it's a fantasy novel structure of, you know, two more books. So with all of that, the two other books will then solve the other two parts of the three-part mystery. So everything will be solved by the end.
But you know, the frustration of hanging in a cliffhanger is the anticipation and the need and the want for the next one to come out.
Yes. And they're all out. They're out. So all three of these novels are out. So this wraps up, you know, the...
Oh, I bought all three of them already.
Well, bless you. They're out. And then Maggie's story is completely separate. So that's not a... They're dealing with a completely different set of mysteries. So this one is all resolved. And then Maggie and Reverend Coronado deal with their own sets of stories, stuff that's directly related to the church.
It's like kind of Sherilyn Kenyon's books when I was reading her books. It's like you read it and then it finishes. And it's like, well, I really didn't want it to finish. And then you catch that character in another book and you're like, oh, really? It didn't kind of finish. So it kind of keeps going. Right,
exactly. It just keeps going. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I love them too much to let them go. So, right. You know, I'm really glad to keep with them.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of your writing and see how you play these characters in your new books.
I appreciate that very much.
Especially Eve and Jacob. That's going to be interesting.
Oh, I love them.
They are absolutely adorable. I swear, her blushing as she turns around and walks away, it was just like, oh.
It was really fun to sort of, you know, kind of like fall in love with them as they're falling in love. It's just really, it's very pure and very honest. And it really did my heart good. To just sort of be in that sweet kind of innocent, kind of sometimes bumbling place where they don't really know what they're doing. But Jacob's just so lovely and kind and wonderful. And so it's, you know, she's the one that's a lot more awkward. And so that's really fun.
So she seems like she's not in the beginning. She seems like she's really...
Right. She seems like she's completely... that she's got it all under control. She's a manager. She leads this department. And then he just completely... makes her realize everything. How much she doesn't know. Yeah, she's just going to fumble around.
It's awesome. And just your writing technique. And I'm going to be straight up and honest with you. I'm not a big word person. I usually go to the husband and say, what does this mean? So whenever I was reading your book, I did put the dictionary on the thing quite a few times because I'm like, wait, that's a word I'm not familiar with. I'm from LA. I'm from Lower Alabama. We don't get the big words. We make up small words.
You know, it's one of those things where I want to try to have a realistic sort of Victorian sounding book, but still be accessible. So I try to sort of split the difference between, you know, a very dense, you know, Henry James kind of, you know, I love Henry James as a writer, looking at something like The Turn of the Screw, which is one of my favorite books, but it's just very, very, very dense. Right. And so I tried to not, you know, a modern editor is not going to kind of let that fly, especially not for sort of a historical fantasy action adventure story. So I still want to lean into some of the big words that give it a feel. You know, I love them too. And so it's, you know, so I just kind of try to use things that I hope can be explained within the context of the sentence, even if folks don't necessarily know right off the bat. But it's fun for me to have that kind of challenge for a reader without it being completely 19th century sounding. So I have to really split the difference. It has to sound a bit more complicated because language was a bit more complicated.
It was very complicated then.
But still be accessible to the modern ear. So it's really about trying to split the difference, kind of trying to filter that 19th century voice through a modern ear.
Oh, I love listening and actually reading and learning bigger words because, I mean, like I said, I come from Alabama, Lower Alabama. We learned big words in school, but we didn't retain them because it's not how we speak. We speak with small words, not because we're stupid or dense or dumb. It's just because maybe lazy sometimes, but
well, there's regionalisms in all things. Yeah. It's like, you know, that's, you can't, you know, it has nothing to do with intelligence. It has everything to do with just, you know, the context and the culture. So, you know, sometimes too, and just also too, efficiency. It's like, there's a lot of that language that isn't frankly efficient. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, when folks want to get straight to the point, you're not going to go for those complicated words. So
I'm going to say y'all. Yeah. Instead of you all, which takes up a little extra second of y'all, my time.
Y'all is a very, very useful word and I use it all the time. Yes. So yes. I use it all the time.
And ain't, I mean, used to could. Joseph, like my husband, Justin, he's like, ain't is not in the dictionary. I say, oh, look it up. It is now. Go.
It is now.
Go it look now. It up.
It is. Oh, yeah. It absolutely is.
But he's like, well, used to could it. And I'm like, well, I still say it. So, and I'm fixing to go make dinner. So.
Sounds like a plan.
Right. But no, they get a lot of. I love the diversity of languages because I'll listen to a French accent or a German accent or even a Boston accent.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's so cool. I wish I could do it. And all I can do is this one.
That's so true, though. Anything, because it's different. It's difference is exciting. Yeah. And so oh, I think that is. That's just, that's one of the reasons why I have so many different backgrounds in my book, because I want to just share just how exciting New York City is for that aspect, that just so many different
so many
kinds
languages
of people were coming and into, yes. You know, and adding their own flair to everything, yes. Which I just think is cool.
And oh my gosh, I found out there's like 4 or 5 different Southern dialects. And I'm like,
yeah,
there is
definitely,
and you can tell.
You can. It's true.
And it's like, oh, wow, that is very interesting. I've been here 13 years in Oklahoma. Out of my family, my daughter was born here. My 2 boys were pretty much raised here because the youngest was 4 and the oldest was 7. And they don't have an accent at all. Now, my daughter, she can throw out a Southern accent, a British accent, and some other accents she came out with.
That's great. So she's got a good ear then.
Oh, she does. And she wants to be an actress. And I'm
well,
like,
good. Then that's a good.
Well, we got to get started.
Right there. Yeah.
She's great at it. Now, my oldest son can do a British accent amazingly.
That's great.
And I'm sitting there trying to do all these accents with him. And I sound like I'm from backwoods Alabama.
It is true that when you pick stuff up from a younger age, it's like whether it's learning languages or whether it's learning accents, your ear is a little more flexible. And so, yeah, I think it's one of those things where kids will almost always pick it up more quickly.
And I wish I could have gotten her into languages, and I tried to get her into German. I tried to get her into Japanese, and I tried to get her into Spanish right off the bat. But as busy as I got, because I started my paranormal group in 2012, mm-hmm. I got pregnant with her in 2013.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I put it off for a year. I went on one investigation while I was pregnant with her. I said, no, I'm not doing that. No.
Fair.
That's too vulnerable. So I waited until after I had her, actually a year and a half after I had her, because I was a stay-at-home mom for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Before I actually started delving more into it, because I didn't want to bring something home or I didn't want to.
Yeah, no, I'm around the totally baby. With you. I think that was wise.
But she... After she got of age to where she was learning other things, I started her in it, but I started back into the paranormal and other things too. So it was like, okay, honey, you get to teach her languages. He goes, I don't know any languages. I said, I don't either, but I'm throwing Duolingo at her and she's learning it. So why don't you do that? But
there you go.
She got disinterested. She would do it for a little bit and then she'd get disinterested. And she's a gamer. She likes games. She likes theater. She likes a lot of things that I liked at her age that my parents tried to encourage me to do something else that would make me more money.
Oh, yeah.
No, because that's
you got to follow your passion. That's the thing. There's plenty of ways in which you can make the arts work for you as a career.
Yes.
You just have to know how to hustle. That's all. It's just, you know, there's no single career that is going to be a guaranteed income that is, you know, that's never going to have its ups and downs. I mean, I don't know. I believe in following your passion. And then
you do,
you have to make it work. You have to, you know, make it work for you somehow. But that's the thing. I definitely have tried a bunch of different careers. I've definitely tried a bunch of different jobs, and I have found that being a freelance artist, actor, writer is the way for me to go. But it does mean, because all of those professions are very hit or miss, that I have to have a lot of different contracts going at the same time so that I will get paid somewhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just one of those things where you take on things for it to be your passion.
Yep.
You take on certain things.
Exactly.
And that's just, I personally couldn't imagine another way.
I couldn't either. And that's how my husband, like, he goes, you start this one and you never finish it. I said, I did finish it. And yeah, 2 years later. Well, I still finished it. But
like, things take the time they take.
Yep. I'm like, it's just, he's like, you do a lot of crafts. You do a lot of artistic stuff. Like, I made my son's wedding invitations, and I made another couple's wedding invitations, and I make these little cute vintage drawers that can hold beads or earrings or whatever you want to put in them. Yeah, I'll have to show you. And I started making molds with different drawer knobs and everything, because I'm going to start using those for the drawers instead of what I previously used. And I've learned how to make them sturdier now, so I'm getting into that. But at the same time, I'm doing my podcast and my artistic graphics that I do and throw up online. And it's like, I've got to choose what I want to do at that point in time and concentrate on it, because I squirrel so much. Just like now, when I told you 20 minutes ago, I'd let you go.
I think that's just natural though, too. I think I think anybody who's creative has to have an ongoing conversation with themselves about focus and about, sort of, you know, for me, the deadlines are key for me, is that the deadlines tell me what I have to work on next. And that's why, it's one of the reasons why I stay traditionally published, where I have other people outside of myself making those deadlines for me, because I can't rely on myself to do it. So that's one of the reasons why I've stayed, even though I'm a freelancer, I'm still beholden to these other schedules, and that's how I get anything done.
Well, actually, what I want you to do is promote yourself, where you want people to email you at or message you at or wrote websites.
Great. So you can find me at LeannaReneeHeber.com. So that's LeannaReneeHieber.com. You'll find links to all my social media. I am most often on Twitter, because that's a lot of publishing is very much on Twitter. I'm definitely on Instagram. I am very little on Facebook. So I do have an author page there. I just don't check in there very often. I have a writer's resource guide. So if you are an aspiring writer and you want to know my advice about writing, well, I have it all written out for you. I have everything that helped me, all the resources that I can think to put down are there linked on my website. So if you go there and you go to the free reads page or the contact page, you will find the link to So You Want to Be a Writer, and that will click through to my blog, and that has everything that was helpful to me when I was starting out. So there's a bunch of resources on my website for sure. And my books are available wherever books are sold. The only thing that's exclusive in terms of a particular site is my work with Scribd. So my novellas that are the ones I have done the audio books for are on scribd.com. That's scribd.com. I appreciate everybody's time and interest.
Oh, thank you for coming on. You have a wonderful night, a fantabulous night.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And that's it for Leanna Renee Heber. Thank you guys so much for tuning in tonight with me at ParaXRadioNetwork.com and the chat rooms, just chatting along. We'll be back next week with Charles F. Rosenay. Such an awesome guy. You'll want to tune in for that one, listen in on his experience in the paranormals and his book that he's got out, the book of Top 10 horror lists. It's rather interesting. A lot of different people talk about their scariest movies or scariest books. He also talks about the Beatles and Dracula's Castle and the tours that he's given there. So why don't you come on and join us next Wednesday, February 2nd, 8 p.m. right here on ParaX Radio Network. If you want to hear the full shows without any interruptions, any ads, any of the hoo-has that we got going in to block some of the not so nice words, you're more than welcome to go over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/EPP_podcast. With the full length audios. There'll be some videos coming up soon. Also, we'll have some blogs going up on the website at Exploring the Paranormal with GeeksParanormal.com. You're more than welcome to hit me up on my Facebook page at Exploring the Paranormal Perspective. Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in, and y'all have a wonderful rest of your week.